are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Today, we are once again going to do some quick coronavirus-related updates as it relates to the NBA. Today, it's a smattering of news from a variety of areas, some positive, some not so great. And again, mostly there's just a little bit of speculation involved, and we don't really know what's happening next. But we'll touch on that because it is the news of the day, and I think it's an important update. Then we're going to dive into a couple of NBA mock drafts that are out there, some more recent than others. But basically just discussing what the Wolves' current draft positioning is as it stands today with, you know, roughly 15 games left on the schedule still that may or may not get played. And then also what players could be on the radar, on the Wolves radar at each spot in the first round based on these mock drafts and also positional need. Again, we're going to spend a lot of time, you know, most days each week, we're going to talk some draft as that's kind of the next big, even if the regular season does come back, of course, the Wolves aren't making the playoffs. So that's what we have to look forward to as Wolves fans for sure. First, as always, a quick reminder to please subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T Wolves. That's at Locked On T Wolves. Don't forget the T. The news yesterday, I think this was yesterday, Tuesday afternoon, Kevin Durant is one of four Brooklyn Nets who recently tested positive for the coronavirus. The Nets hired a private company to test their team. They did not play the Utah Jazz at any point in the last couple of weeks, and they had the whole team tested. Four players were positive. Of course, New York has the worst outbreak of any state in the United States at this point. They've actually surpassed Washington for a number of cases, and Durant was one of the four players. The Nets did not identify the players and initially said three of the four were not really experiencing any symptoms at all, and only one was really closely being monitored. Durant put out on social media, I think it was, or through Shams Charania of The Athletic, that he's fine and doesn't really have any symptoms. So it's not Durant that's experiencing the symptoms. But that then, of course, triggered the now everybody that played the Nets wants to get tested. And so the LA Lakers are going to test their team. There's a little bit of controversy out there related to NBA teams getting testing before other people, but I'll leave that for everybody else to debate. But that's out there as well. But the Lakers are going to test their team. At this point, now we know of Christian Wood from the Pistons, Rudy Gobert, Donovan Mitchell from the Jazz, and now four players from the Nets who have tested positive here league-wide. So something we'll continue to track. Good that it doesn't sound like anybody's in real serious condition of any of those players. That was kind of the big news of Tuesday afternoon. On the more positive side, related to the NBA and coming back eventually, the NBA Players Association Executive Director Michelle Roberts came out in the USA Today on Tuesday and noted that the union's aligned with the league and that they want to try and save the season. We talked on Tuesday on this podcast about how, according to the report from Brian Windhorst at ESPN, the league is very motivated to play at least a handful more games because the regional sports networks have a clause in their contract. They need to play, the teams need to play 70% of, or excuse me, not 70%, 70 games of each season in order for the league to retain 100% of revenue from those RSN deals. And so the league is very motivated to get those games played. And then also so are the players, because there are some languages in the in contracts, including, as noted by Michelle Roberts, a force majeure, which could, in some sense, you know, it's possible the league could make an argument to terminate some contracts of players, or not terminate, but not pay out contracts in full and things like that. And things get messy if games don't get played. She doesn't say a number of games or say a target date either, understandably. There is a note from Adrian Wojnarowski at ESPN that the Board of Governors, the NBA, met with the Surgeon General of the U.S. on Tuesday, and the NBA left the meeting with quote, feelings of optimism that the season will resume before July, end quote, is the optimism there. I think given, as we talked about on Tuesday, given the timeline where we're at now, it seems pretty unlikely that the league would resume play in June and still play the rest of the season because it's effectively a month. Even if they shorten, you know, played more back-to-backs or even played back-to-backs as they did, you know, in the most recent lockout season, the league would really struggle to play all the games within a month. So again, my personal take, and I said this on Tuesday, is that the league will play a handful of games, get to that 70 game threshold, allow playoff teams to play themselves into shape instead of going 0-60 and saying, okay, we're not playing. Here's a week of practice and now playoff basketball. I also think that allows for some closure for non-playoff teams too, instead of just a weird end of the season. So of course the Timberwolves, that would be great if we got to see five more Timberwolves games this year. But I think that's my prediction. I think we're looking at an early and mid-June, maybe no fans present, and teams play five or so games, maybe seven games, and then the league does playoffs throughout July and into early August and has the draft by the end of August, early September, and that's that. So I think that's probably what they're targeting, and that's where the optimism is coming from. But good to hear Michelle Roberts at the NBPA saying that the players are on the same page there and that they very much would like to finish the season and don't want to throw in the towel at this point. So that's just a little bit of positive news there. And then also a final note related to the NBA hiatus that we're in. The Timberwolves did announce on Tuesday that they are the Timberwolves and Lynx together, led by Glenn Taylor, who of course owns both teams, are pledging to donate up to $1 million in a relief fund for the part-time game day staff at Target Center. That's directly from the release that the Timberwolves posted. And there's some complications there as to why this took a few days. And Taylor doesn't own the building. It's owned by the city of Minneapolis. And he also doesn't own the companies that the majority of these workers are employed by. They're you know, whether it's concessionaires or ushers or security, they're all different vendors or different companies that actually employ these folks. And so good move by Glenn Taylor, good gesture. Understandable that there was some red tape and some hoops to jump through to get there. So positive to see that happening. And you know, the majority of teams now have announced that they're doing something like that. And every team situation is different. I think that's important to note. And ultimately, as long as, you know, if we find out several weeks later that some teams were refusing to help, that's one thing. But I think as long as everybody gets to the right place, regardless of the hoops they have to jump through and the legalities of some of these things, it's awesome to see NBA teams, NBA players, owners, and other organizations stepping up. We talked about Carl Anthony Towns donating $100,000 to Mayo Clinic to help with the actual testing for coronavirus. And we talked about that extensively the last couple of days as well. So good to see all of these things happening, coming together and seeing everybody support one another during what's been a really difficult time. And you know, there frankly isn't too much of an end in sight in terms of when the NBA can return to play. But at any rate, we are going to move on and talk about actual basketball next. We're going to talk NBA draft, talk draft positioning for the Timberwolves, where they stand today, where their picks would land, and also who the mock drafts are saying the Timberwolves may be interested in selecting at each of those picks. The Timberwolves hold their first-round pick in the upcoming NBA draft. Of course, we don't know when the draft will be, but let's just say it's in August, maybe early September. The Timberwolves hold their own pick, which right now they have the third worst record in the league. We'll talk about that in a minute. They also hold the Brooklyn Nets pick. It was originally the Nets pick. They traded it to Atlanta as part of the Allen Crabb trade, the first Allen Crabb trade, and then Atlanta traded it to Minnesota as part of the four-teamer that included Clint Capella, Robert Covington, and all the players that went from Denver to Minnesota, Malik Beasley, Juancho Hernangómez, Jared Vanderbilt, etc. So that pick also came to Minnesota. Right now, the Nets have the seventh seed in the Eastern Conference, which means that that's actually the 16th overall pick in the draft, and it's probably going to stay right in that range. The Nets are fairly comfortably in the playoff picture there. They are a half game ahead of the Magic, so if the league did come back and play 3 to 5 to 7 games, perhaps the Nets even slide one spot and the Wolves could get the 15th pick. They are not likely to slide all the way out of the playoff picture in the East. The Wizards are 6 games behind them, so unless the league was to play all 82 games and the Nets fell apart, then the Wolves will get this pick. If it does somehow fall in the top 14, if the Nets somehow fall out of the playoff picture, then the pick would convey to next year. Of course, the Nets are only going to get better with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving coming back from injury next season. And in that scenario, of course, the Wolves would get the pick. It just wouldn't be quite as good of a pick because obviously the better the Nets are, the worse the pick would be. So in the sense that it's lottery protected, this would be the year to get it. And it looks like they will. So let's plan on it being the 16 pick. It could still be the 15 pick, but either way, they're going to get this, you know, middle of the first round draft pick. And then also they have the 33rd overall pick in the draft, which is the third pick of the second round. A really nice selection to have. And, you know, interesting to see what the Wolves do. I don't think they're going to want to draft three additional rookies on top of some of the young wing players they have, a Josh Okogie, Jarrett Culver. Throw in guys like Jordan McLaughlin and other young players, Keelan Martin, Naz Reid, Jalen Noel. They've got plenty of guys who fit into that, you know, first 2 years in the league category. So I'd be surprised if the Wolves drafted three rookies. That said, there's so many other possible scenarios and draft up scenarios trading off a pick for a future pick. Remember, the Wolves don't have a pick in 2021 because they traded it in the D'Angelo Russell, Andrew Wiggins swap. So always possible they convey one of those picks moving forward, but we'll have to wait and see. So three good picks. The first pick in the first round for the Wolves, technically right now they're third. They're like a half game ahead of the Hawks in terms of the reverse standings, which of course determines lottery odds. Right now the Wolves have played three less games than the Atlanta Hawks. They have one less win, but also two less losses. So that puts them 0.2 percentage points ahead of the Hawks in the reverse standings, which gives them a better chance at landing that top pick. The Wolves odds right now, so the way that the lottery changed their odds a few years ago is the top, or the three worst teams all have a 14% chance at the top slot. And actually they have the same percent chance at the top four picks. And then beyond that is where for instance, the Warriors have the worst record. They can't fall worse than the fifth pick. The Timberwolves with the third worst record could fall all the way to seven. But the way that their odds work out right now is they have a 14% chance at the first pick, 13.4% at the second pick, 12.7 at the third, and 12% at the fourth. That means that they have a 52.1% chance, Minnesota does, of landing in the top four in this draft. They have a 66.9, so basically a 67% chance of staying in the top five. So, you know, two out of three times they run this lottery, the Wolves have a top five pick. The other overwhelming, I guess, chance would be 26% they fall to sixth, and there's only a 7.1% chance they fall to seventh. So seems pretty likely they'll have a top five pick. And, you know, they've got what, roughly a, I don't know, just a hair under 40% chance of being in the top three, or right at about 40% chance. So good positioning for the Wolves. It could shift a little depending on how many more games are played, because it is so tight between Cleveland, Minnesota, and Atlanta. Detroit's not far behind. So there could be some shifting there. But at any rate, they're very likely to end up with a top five pick, even if they shift down or up a little bit. So that's kind of what we'll be working off of. And of course, all mock drafts at this point are making some assumptions in terms of how the rest of the season plays out as well. So what I want to do next is kind of look at a couple of more prominent mock drafts that are out there, talk about the players that it says that the Wolves may be interested in and may be available when the Wolves pick, and kind of go from there. So we talked a little bit late last week, I think it was on Friday's episode, about Denny Avidia from Maccabi Tel Aviv and whether or not he could be a good fit for the Wolves. If you missed that podcast, the cliff notes on Avidia is that he is essentially a playmaker in a fours body, good ball handling, good passing, good instincts, probably an okay defender. It's kind of hard to tell at this point, but he's not a very good shooter. And that's obviously a significant issue. He is shooting just over 50% from the free throw line, and he's hovered right around 30% from 3-point range, which of course is a little bit closer overseas than it is in the NBA. He probably would be okay defensively, probably would be okay in the glass. There are actually some similarities, and this isn't, and I promise this on Friday, it's not a lazy European comparison. There are some similarities to a worse shooting Juancho Hernan Gomez in terms of being an okay defender, an okay rebounder, good feel and things like that. But the athleticism is probably about similar as well. The problem is he just can't shoot. And depending on what the cost is to retain Hernan Gomez, the Wolves can keep him around for, you know, it's so hard to know what the market value is going to be, but $10 million or so a year, maybe a little bit less, then that's a better pick than spending a high first round pick on a guy like this. This draft isn't seen to be very deep. The following year's draft is. And of course the Wolves have three good picks in this draft and not next year's. And so what you're looking at here is a guy whose ceiling is probably a solid starter, which is basically what Juancho Hernan Gomez is. And his floor is more of a fringy rotation guy. And, you know, there's some question as to whether or not using a high pick on a guy like this makes a lot of sense. Of course, we don't know. And this is an SI.com mock draft from a little over a month ago where they had the Wolves taking him fourth. The Wolves slotted in fourth. At this point, technically the Wolves have as good of a chance of landing third. And so this particular mock has the Hawks taking Isaac Okoro, the wing player from Auburn, who's a freshman this year at the three spot. And so potentially he could be an option. Of course, the Wolves have plenty of wings. They're just looking for guys that are more consistent defensively and better shooters. And so potentially that's an option, although he's not a great three-point shooter either. There's always the slight chance that Anthony Edwards falls. We talked about that the other day, the guard from Georgia. That seems pretty unlikely. And then beyond that, you know, you're getting into speculating on guys who are probably going to be later lottery picks, but the Wolves could choose that they really like somebody. Remember, the rumor last year was that they tried to trade up to draft Darius Garland when he was taken by the Cavs. The Wolves took Jarrett Culver instead. And Culver has, of course, shown flashes, but isn't quite good enough of a defender and certainly isn't a good enough shooter to do exactly what the Wolves need him to do. So they certainly are still in the market for wings. Although, again, if they feel good enough about a prospect who could play power forward next to Towns, then they could let Hernan Gomez walk or have a different negotiating position in restricted free agency, as it's really difficult to know what he's going to get. And so that could give the Wolves a little bit of leverage if they feel good about somebody that's in the draft. All right, next up, I want to mention one other possibility at number four or number three, wherever the Wolves land there, and then also talk a little bit about mid-first round and what the Wolves could look to do there. One of the more recent mock drafts that's out there is by Ricky O'Donnell over at SB Nation. This one just came out this week, and he also has the Wolves drafting fourth and selecting Avija. I think that that's just kind of everybody wants to slot in the guy who is who's a four, because they know that the Wolves only have at this point Hernan Gomez and James Johnson at the four. Of course, Hernan Gomez likely could be part of this team's future, but doesn't have to be. And James Johnson won't be beyond next year. So it's a natural match. And also everybody just kind of has this consensus top four or five. Somebody who's kind of in that 5 to 10 range right now is Obi Toppin from Dayton. And if the Wolves are looking for a four that fits next to Towns, I think he's actually a better fit than somebody like Avija. Toppin 6'9", he is good on the glass. He can finish in the paint. He's athletic, and he's generally an efficient player. He's a good free throw shooter, and he can shoot the three. It's something that he didn't do a lot of early on, and he's a a redshirt sophomore this year at Dayton. But he's starting to shoot the three more and a little bit more effectively. For instance, O'Donnell points out he's in the 99th percentile in points per possession this season. Obviously, playing at Dayton, you know, some of those things are competition, and they had some easier matchups than some other teams, and you have to factor that in. But we've seen time and time again that playing at a small school hasn't necessarily hampered guys coming to the NBA as prospects. And an athletic rebounder who can stretch the floor a little bit and can make free throws, that's a really valuable player to have next to Karl-Anthony Towns. Defense, there's some questions about his level of engagement there and how teams will be able to use him defensively. And that is, that's, I guess, the biggest question mark. I mean, there's question marks for all these guys, and especially in this year's draft. But I think the upside of what he could be next to Karl-Anthony Towns is really attractive. We'll spend a lot more time diving into some of these prospects as we get closer. Again, we have plenty of time to talk draft, but I wanted to throw out there that he's not being mocked as high as three or four at this point, but he's somebody that the Wolves absolutely should have some interest in and probably do. And this is a situation where if the draft is really as poor as people think that it might be, then it's not really reaching down to get somebody, and the Wolves aren't probably going to be able to pull off a trade to get an asset and trade backwards three or four picks, unless there's somebody like if the Knicks fall in love with I don't know if the Knicks fall in love with LaMelo Ball, or if the Knicks fall in love with who's the other guard, Killian Hayes, or somebody like that, where the Knicks need somebody to create. They need to create a splash. Maybe they want to trade up and do something, and the Wolves can pick up an asset, an extra second round pick in next year's draft or something like that, in order to trade back and get a guy like Obi Toppin. I think could make a lot of sense, and the Wolves should definitely consider doing that, quite frankly. So that's something to keep an eye on. In terms of the Wolves' second pick, that's going to be, again, at this moment, it's 16th, and it probably will be right in that range. There's a few guys to look out for there. And again, we're just looking at these mock drafts and trying to get a sense for who could be on the board. The SI mock draft from about a month ago that I referenced earlier has the Wolves taking center Isaiah Stewart from Washington, and notes him as somebody who is Basically, his strength is he's a rebounder. He has good size. He is, you know, he's 6 foot nine and is kind of a power forward center hybrid. And the Wolves do need somebody who can rebound. He profiles as a bench player, and it depends on what the Wolves think that they have in Naz Reid. Different skill set than Naz Reid, of course, but same position. And I don't see this as a fit for the Wolves. I don't think that they want Towns backup or a guy who could play with Towns to be somebody who plays almost strictly below the rim and doesn't have much value in the open floor. And, you know, even if he's switchable, if he's still not ultra athletic, and I just don't know that that's the best fit. The more intriguing question, or the more intriguing fit potentially, I should say, from SB Nation was, and I'm probably saying this wrong, I couldn't find a pronunciation anywhere, but Alexei Pokseyevi from, he played at Olympiakos this last year. He's Serbian. He's legit 7 feet, and he plays more like a guard than anything else. If you watch some video of him, he's a really good ball handler and really good in the open floor. Up until this year, the competition level was questionable, to say the least. But he's a good shooter, and he actually finishes pretty well in the paint for being extremely, extremely thin. The biggest issue with him is, can he guard effectively at the NBA level given his weight? And can he finish enough in the paint and grab enough rebounds? To this point, even playing professionally over the past year, he's been a really good rebounder as a 7-footer, and his block rate is really solid too. And he scores in transition. He handles the ball. The question is, I think this is just a complete wild card, because he could end up being a non-factor in the NBA because of the high variance and some of these things. Like, we don't really know if he can rebound and defend at the NBA level, but the evidence says he might be able to. It just doesn't look like he should be able to. He's extremely slender, but very fluid if you watch him. So, and the 3-point shooting ability, it's pretty average, but it looks fluid. And I think if he shoots more catch and shoot shots versus off the dribble, a lot of the footage I've seen of him is him shooting off the dribble. And if he's becomes more of a catch and shoot guy in the NBA, I think he could be an above average 3-point shooter who also can hold his own defensively and rebound. He could be more of an intriguing guy to come off the bench behind Towns. If Naz Reid wasn't emerging in the way that he has, I would say that, that Pokseyevi could be a great backup for Towns, and somebody who could come in and kind of replicate some of the things that Towns does and still give you that floor stretching dynamic and the, ability in the open floor and transition that some of the other guys might not be able to. And he's not the same player as Reid. Really, the only skill that's the same there is the 3-point shooting and maybe a little bit of passing touch and things like that. But Pokseyevi can handle the ball better, be a little bit of a creator, do more on the open floor than Naz Reid. So especially if the Wolves don't end up taking, you know, this same mock draft also had the Wolves taking Avija in 4th overall. If the Wolves don't take him, and if they go guard, if they take a guy like Obi Toppin, who's maybe a little bit of a different skill set, then I could see them going with a guy like this as a backup center candidate for behind Towns if they end up not thinking that Naz Reid is a long-term solution there. So that's definitely a name to keep an eye on. And I'll absolutely be talking more about him as well as I put together kind of my big board and my favorite picks. And we'll go down that list, talk through pros and cons from each guy who I think the Wolves should look at. But I just wanted to mention what some of those mocks were saying and what my takes were on those selections. All right, that's all we have for you today here at Locked On Wolves. Thanks once again for listening to the podcast. Of course, Locked On Wolves is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. We'll, of course, be back tomorrow and every day the rest of this week. And we will get into some more draft coverage. We'll talk about having some guests on the show here. And, we'll probably do some reminiscing here pretty soon on past Timberwolves seasons. We'll do some lists, you know, best Timberwolves players at certain positions, best memories, things like that, as we move forward here through this unprecedented time in NBA history. That wraps up this edition of Locked On Wolves. Now tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Locked On Fantasy Basketball. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.